This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings once again to everybody out there at TFMR. Hey, I have a special podcast for you today that I'd really like you to take a few minutes and give a listen to. As you know, from time to time, I've been able to introduce mining company CEOs to you. And they're usually brought to me by my old friend Dan Amadouri, who is the founder of a company called Future Money Trends. And we've talked to a guy, well, even just recently, we talked to a guy by the name of Warwick Smith and his really interesting company that he runs. And I love introducing these companies to and getting a chance to, you know, talk to these guys where the rubber meets the road. And over the years, some have gone up, some have gone down. And, man, now that prices are roaring again, I expect even the ones that have not work yet to start rolling higher again. And so I enjoy and appreciate my friendship with Dan, and I look forward to having more of those interviews in the future. But today I'm going to talk to Dan, and specifically for something that I guess a little unexpected, in that Dan is now an author, and he's written a book that might be of interest to a number of you out there here at TFMR. It's called Don't Save for Retirement. Not Save for Retirement, or, you know, a dummy's guide to retirement, or something that'll normally get you on CNBC in a New York Minute. This is called Don't Save for Retirement, with the subtitle of Millennial's Guide to Financial Freedom. Well, that right away should get your attention. So, Dan, my old friend, thank you for joining me.
Well, hey, thanks for having me on. And I look forward to talking about the book. And if we have time, let's talk a little bit about these mining shares and the stock promotions behind them, because I think there's a big misconception behind that. And if we have time, let's definitely cover that for a few minutes.
No, I do want to do that because, you know, you take heat. Anybody that, you know, goes out and says, hey, you know, this company's got great prospects, immediately gets picked up by people that just hate the sector and say, oh, this is just, you know, blah, 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 blah. When there's a real purpose, if you know, a company that needs cash flow, needs to get their stock up so that it can then be currency, so that they can raise cash organically and expand their operations, beats the crap out of having to be a slave to the banks, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So anything we can do to help them, and so anyway, yeah, we'll get that at the end. But let's primarily discuss the book though, because again, I love the title, "Don't Save for Retirement." Dan, come on, tell me about this. Why did you feel compelled to write it?
You know, it's something that I've always felt even as a young boy. I remember learning about a 401k, and they said, hey, if you do this, you will pay lower taxes when you're 65. And I was like, you'll be in the lowest tax bracket, 65. Wait a minute, when I'm at 65, I want to be in the highest tax bracket. That didn't make sense. I wanted to be successful financially and doing well. And I'm like, why would I want to purposely plan to be poor? And of course, it takes me on a journey for the last 20, 30 years of my life in the financial industry and learning about it and seeing what a real scheme it is, where it's just literally transferring middle-class wealth to Wall Street. All the money that's being made in retirement is the actual people selling the retirement vehicles.
Right.
And when it comes to the book specifically, it happened last year, last September. I was in an attorney's office doing my will and my trust with my wife, and we have three children. And I was like, everything's set up now. And then I was like, I turned to my wife. I said, what happens if something happens to us? How are the kids going to know what to do financially? So I wanted to write this book originally for the children. And then I was like, hey, this was going to be great for everybody, actually, because in the beginning of the book, it shares what happened to my wife and I. Basically, the book starts in a bankruptcy attorney's office. And then it develops into kind of what we learned, what we did, where we failed. And then ultimately, it just really simplifying our lives and adopting what the wealthy do. And they're not saving for retirement. They're not maxing out 401ks. They're focusing on preservation and income and lifestyle choices. Like, what are they going to do for their life? Are they going to monetize their hobby? Are they going to monetize a business that they're very passionate about? And I just really wanted to kind of say, hey, wake up, everybody. Retirement is a failed experiment. You know, just real quickly, I had a New York Times reporter email me yesterday, and he wanted to know all the evidence of what I did in my book. And I was like, okay, well, I can give you my personal evidence. He's like, how many more people can you prove that it's worked for? I'm like, well, look, that's a very hard thing to prove because there hasn't been a study. I said, but I'll tell you, here are some studies. And I just nailed him with, here, Vanguard says the person, people over 65 and older in their 401k accounts, the median is about 50 grand. I was like, here's the data I do have. Retirement that you guys are advocating has absolutely failed for a generation that, my God, you couldn't have had it any easier with the stock market, real estate market, and bond market for the baby boomers.
They're so busy spending, going deeper and deeper into debt, trying to make ends meet due to all of the inflation and the currency devaluation and the taxes and the growth of the government and all this kind of stuff. And so people are led into this story that then you have to participate in paper assets, right? That's the only way you're going to get anywhere. I would imagine you've got a section there, or at least I know your personal feelings, at least, and towards more, you know, direct investments and things that
Absolutely.
You can actually put your hands on.
You know, it's exactly. I like physical gold, physical silver, physical real estate.
Right.
You know, having something backed by a real asset, backed by income. So many people, even when they do buy a stock, they're only focused on it going up. They're not focused on, hey, what is the profit distribution to the investors, whether it's a private or public company. You know, when we get involved in these mining shares, or if somebody gets involved in a 401k, you're speculating because the only way you're going to make more money is if it goes up. Now, if I buy Cisco tomorrow, there's no way I'm ever talking to the CEO. Now, you talk to some of these mining people or cannabis companies for that matter, any microcap, you can actually get to know the people. You can meet them for dinner and find out, hey, am I willing to partner with these people? So I'm very interested in being an active investor and enjoying my wealth as well when it comes to trying to find multiple sources of income, as opposed to just say, hey, let's defer my life and my savings for the next 30 years. Oh, and by the way, taxes are the lowest they've been in 75 years, and I have no idea what the tax rate is going to be when I withdraw money out of a 401k. I mean, you couldn't be more of a gambler than a retirement saver.
Yeah. Yeah. What, Dan, in your book, and I hate to try it, I mean, you obviously put hours and hours and weeks of effort into writing it. And so here I am saying, so tell me, what are the main one or two things? But if you were just to, what's the first couple of things that come to your head that you think are the most important things in your book that people need to know?
Well, first of all, for your readers, if they want to, they can go to futuremoneytrends.com/save, and they can read the introduction and the first chapter of the book for free. And if they choose to go on Amazon after that, I would love for them to do that. But the book takeaways for individuals, I think, first of all, is the fact that my wife and I started in a bankruptcy attorney's office. I was making just above minimum wage at a grocery store. She was a public school teacher. So we found ourselves in a big mess. I had a lot of foreclosures, credit card debt because of trying to make some more money before the housing crash. So you're really starting at a point where someone has imploded their lives. And the first part of the book shows you how we got out, which are some ways we did extreme things. And, you know, for most people, I just really want to show them that the normal of having a 7-year financed auto payment or having a home that is, you know, 7 to 10 times your annual income, all that stuff's not normal. And so many people, and I know your listeners will already probably know this, but so many people have been convinced of all these things that are normal, but they're really not normal. They're completely unsustainable lifestyles, just like our government lives.
Right.
The citizens are living the same lifestyle. And so the first thing we need to do is really, really have a heart-to-heart with ourselves on, first of all, is my lifestyle sustainable? And what exactly do I want in life? A lot of people are just on autopilot until retirement. And I'm like, hey, wake up. What do you want to do? You have kids. You don't have them for 18 years. You have them for 12 years. After 12 years old, they're like done with you. So, you know, really, what are you going to do with this finite time on earth? And then the last part of the book is I really focus on some of the things that I discovered that the wealthy use for either leverage or dual compounding, and different ideas that they have adopted that, you know, it's perfectly normal for them, but the middle class doesn't even get to learn about it. And it's a crime because the wealthy, all of their investments, they all, with outside of their small speculations, they're always paying them something. But
right.
The middle class have been totally sold into investing in things that never pay them.
That's an excellent point. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing while you were talking about truly self-sustaining wealthy people are so often, there may be some stocks, but a lot of times it's real estate, you know, it's hard asset producing, you know, royalty streams, like, you know, natural gas fields, you know, in Oklahoma, you know, that kind of stuff. I remember something out of the book where you mentioned that passive income is the key to financial freedom. You want to expand on that?
Sure. One of the things my wife and I did after we had cut spending, then we took the savings from extreme cuts. I'm not talking about what you read on CNBC about switching your credit card. I'm talking about, like, we moved, we got rid of our pets. We did crazy things in the beginning, but then we took all that extra savings and we put it into things that would make us money. In the beginning, it was just rental properties. Later, we got into some different private equity type investments or venture capitalist investments where we could actually loan a company money and then receive money back, but it, you know, it's secured by the assets in the company. And we started getting into more of that until the point to where our passive income actually paid for our bills, our mandatory bills, electricity, water, housing expenses, and food. And that is really what it was almost a relief on our entire life, because we were able to freely go about our business, do what we love, pour our heart and soul into our business, and not worry about making money, which, of course, you make a lot more money when you're not focused on money. You're just focusing on delivering value to other people.
Yeah. Dan, this is obviously not meant to be investment advice. I mean, we're talking just opinions and getting people to think outside the box. But at the same time, I mean, I've got people on my side. There's people listening to this that are still pre-retirement age, you know, old farts like me at 53, mm-hmm. you know, and you've been working hard and you've been saving and you've 401k or whatever, and you've got your fingers crossed the stock market doesn't crash again and you take another 50% haircut at like the absolute worst time right before retirement. What strategies come to mind for people that are 50 plus or 40 plus?
I mean, I think whether you're 50 or 30, you definitely want to have multiple sources of income. And people, like, you know, they can't get over that they're not going to make $100,000 with passive income tomorrow. Start small. You know, even if you buy some sort of investment, either through private equity or, a mining investment or crowd investment, anything that can pay you, even if it starts small, and let's say it just pays $50 a month, and then you can focus on paying a utility bill. And then it snowballs, or maybe you take that and buy more income. But really, it's one thing that I really have a huge thing in my house, sign for the children, and they see it every day. It says, buy assets that cash flow, because that is the name of the game. If you can start buying, think of it as buying income. The brain is conditioned right now to buy things that go up, because the middle class and poor, of course, they're trying to get rich. The wealthy, their advantage is they're already rich. So they're buying things that are very safe. They're buying things that preserve their wealth and bring in income. So the focus on passive income or investments, whether if you're 53, why not? And if you don't like being a landlord, you can still buy into specific funds. I wouldn't recommend public ones just because of the unnecessary volatility and ties of the stock market. But you can find things where you can own a fractional share of a JW Marriott, of a Walgreens, of a Chevron, of farmland. You know, mm-hmm. I saw your interview with, you had Rick Rule and you and a couple other people, or David and Bill, excuse me. And, you know, Rick, his company Sprott, they offer a lot of investments outside of mining shares. You know, I invested in some farmland, that cash flows. They buy the farmland, they buy the equipment, and then they rent the land and lease the equipment to the farmer. Now the farmer, he has the chance to make a lot of money because he's the one with the crops, but he does have more risk. So he gets more risk, but he also can make more money. Meanwhile, we own the farmland, we're charging rent, we own the equipment, we're leasing that out, and we have cash flow coming in.
Right.
So that is some of the things. So a lot of people immediately think, I need to go into the stock market and buy some yield or dividends. Just forget about that. You know, we've been so conditioned that the stock market is this main source we need to go to. Right. Forget about the stock market. There's so many alternative investments you can participate in.
And dude, the stock market is such a misnomer at this point. You know, I remember when I first passed my Series 7 exam in June of 1990, I mean, we used to write out tickets, you know, buy 200 shares of Walmart and put it in a tube and send it into the cage where the wire operator entered the order. It got, you know, to the specialist on the floor of the exchange. And somebody actually sold 200 shares of stock to my client. you know, now 90% of the volume is just these high frequency trading algorithms, just, you know, swapping things back and forth at the speed of light.
Absolutely. I mean, 85% of the stock market is now controlled by a very small group. And you have central banks openly buying stocks on the public market. There are so many things that are wrong with our markets. We don't have markets. It's like Chris Powell of GATA always says, we don't have markets anymore. We have manipulations.
Yeah. You know, again, the book, like I said, we'll put a link on this page so you can go to Future Money Trends, read the first chapter, and then decide for yourself, you know, if it's something you want to check out. But man, I'm excited. I'm looking right now at my complimentary copy. There's perks awesome. That come with the job, Dan, I'm telling you. So anyway, it's a great book, again, called Don't Save for Retirement. Dan, in our final minutes, let's go back to what we initially began to talk about. And you'd mentioned describing what it is that Future Money Trends does and why I'm happy to, you know, when you offer me someone who's a CEO of a mining company, I'm happy to say, yeah, I'll talk to them and put it on my site. Tell everybody, you know, what your mission is there.
Yeah. So with Future Money Trends, we originally had like Google ads, just like everybody else. And then I realized, I was like, you know what? Why don't we advertise for the mining stocks? So that's how that whole thing started, where we would advertise. But we were very specific and select because I wouldn't say an expert back in 2011. I'm stumbling, trying to be a great investor as far as these mining things go. But they're very speculative. You know, we're involved in other things besides mining. But here's what we did. We did something very simple and very honest. We simply identified the companies that Rick Rule, Eric Sprott, Doug Casey, Katusa, the best in the business were buying. I wanted to know where was their money going, who were the people they were following. And of course, anybody we take on, we don't look for advertisers. They typically contact us, almost 99% of them. I mean, I swear, go on a contact us page and pretend like you're a mining share. See the response you get. We literally make everybody have a warm referral. So if you don't know a Keith Neumeyer, you don't know a Rick Rule, you can't even get in contact with us. And so what we try to do is we try to identify companies who have a management team that is on their second go around and a management team that understands marketing, because marketing is like extremely important. You know, a lot of people who are getting into the mining shares might assume that if a company spends money on marketing that they're a pump and dump, but it's just the opposite. Now, there are tons of pump and dumps, of course, out there. Believe me, this is Vancouver and the mining world.
Right.
But, you know, the ones that are smart, that pay for marketing, that are real companies, those are really the companies you want to own, because they're going to outperform not only when there's a bull market, but they're less dilutive during a bear market. And I'll give you a perfect example. There is a company out there, and actually, I don't even want to mention it because I don't want to upset anybody, but there's a company in 2016 that made 8 gold acquisitions. They went from 0 ounces to 14 million ounces. They also went from 75 million shares to 600 million shares. Their stock went from 21 cents to $1.30. They actually were able to be less dilutive because they kept their share price up by bringing in new investors and keeping the awareness going. Now, people are like, well, that's a pump in. No, no, no. Think about what they're doing. They're actually, especially for the current shareholders, they're not diluting the stock. Without that marketing, that stock wouldn't have 600 million shares. They would have had to have issued billions of shares.
Yeah.
But instead, they were able to make acquisitions. Other companies, they might have warrants. Well, do you want the company issuing another 20 million shares and raising funds? Or do you want them exercising warrants? You know, everybody hates promotion until they're in the stock. And then they love promotion.
Right.
And by the way, I don't want to throw the entire community under the bus here, but whether it's Agora or Stansberry or all these people who are heroes to us, they're all promoting. It is part of the business in mining, because the simple fact is, especially in these junior mining companies, if they don't have liquidity, they also can't attract certain type of investors that you need, like institutions or even the GDXJ if that's desirable. So look, it is what it is. It's part of the business. And if you've ever been in a stock that's not promoted, I guarantee you, you will hate your life. I'm to the point now where I don't care if they're working with Future Money Trends or not. I ask them, what is your IR budget? And if it's not $500,000 for the next year, I don't even touch it. Because I was like, look, if I don't want to be part of a stock that trades $1,000 a day. I want a stock that's attracting the best in the business, the hedge fund managers. I want a stock that is liquid.
Right. Right. And, you know, as you said, it's one of those things. Sometimes you got to wait, you know, The one that comes to mind is like First Mining. It's not even, what do we call it? It's First Mining Finance now.
First Mining Gold
with First Keith Neumeyer. And he's bought all those deals. Well, at $1,200 gold, they're going nowhere. And so people are holding those shares, just dumping them, getting out of them. But now that we're back to $1,500 and $1,600, all of a sudden those things are going to be rather attractive properties again. And I'm sure it's going to work just fine. I've bought every single one, and people know this. Every company we've ever talked to, I've always bought shares myself. And I'm so because I figure, Dan, if you've looked at them, and again, the key, and I always ask people this, the guys I interview, is like, and what's your background, and how many times have you done this before? It's like the most recent one with that Warwick Smith of what's his company?
U.S. Gold, and he was one of the founders, the co-founders of Fortuna.
Right, Silver. and his chief geologist came from Newmont.
Yes,
who's and their property is right next to Newmont's thing in Nevada, and so it's like, well,
absolutely.
This makes sense. But like you said, you can't if you're not trying to market and get people to understand, get people to buy it and then hold it because they understand what's behind it. They don't just throw it out, you know, and crash it. Which then you just get a death spiral. If you know the story, then you're apt to hold it. Then you maintain liquidity. The company stays alive and all that kind of stuff. I just think it's a valuable thing that you guys do. And that's I appreciate you taking the time to explain it to everybody so they understand, what the purpose of Future Money Trends is.
Well, and if they look at like First Majestic Silver or a K92 or Gold Mining, these are all companies that have paid us to market them. But look at those companies. So now this is a low bar in the mining world, but think about all the mining companies, anybody who's listening to this, that you've purchased, and think about how many have gone down 50% or gone to zero.
Yeah.
What are the odds that these companies that spend money on marketing that people supposedly call pump and dumps, none of them went to zero? In fact, K92 is at an all-time high. First Majestic went from $6 to like $11 since May 31st. Gold Mining, which is largest owners is Doug Casey and Marin Katusa. That stock's gone from about 70 cents to $1.20 during this run.
Yep.
These
yeah.
companies are doing great because people know about them. Why do you want to own a mining share that nobody knows about?
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, like I said, I always make sure I buy a little bit as well. Cause I wouldn't want to think anybody to think that I, you know, just out here telling you about it, and I'm not willing to do my own research and own it myself. But of course, it always comes with that caveat. Everything does. You know, this is just an introduction. Do your own due diligence. I mean, we're all out here, you know, trying to sort our way through. And then if it's something that fits your risk profile, if it's something you think looks attractive, then you take a position. And then finally, once you make millions of dollars in it, you don't just leave it in your IRA, as you said. You got to do something with it. Get some passive income. That's the key to true wealth, just like your book says.
Absolutely.
My friend, I very much appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And again, I just think I've been trying to write a book for about 4 years, and my ADHD is so bad, I just can't possibly pull it off. And so anybody that actually takes the time, I'm sure you had to sit down after the kids went to bed and all that kind of stuff and write this thing. Anybody that takes the time to do it, I just have all the respect in the world for us. So thank you for doing it. Again, Don't Save for Retirement, Dan Amadori.
Thanks so much.
I encourage everybody to check it out.
Appreciate your time. And again, futuremoneytrends.com/save. Read the first chapter and intro for free. It would be an honor. And please send me back any feedback or email.
All right. All the best, my friend. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Craig.
And from everybody here at TFMR, thank you for listening. Please be sure to check out Don't Save for Retirement by Dan Amadori.